Welcome to Conversations About Running, the podcast from Running Trips. Today, Callum and I are joined by Victor Schmangs, and we discuss all things double threshold. Victor is a Swedish runner who follows the double threshold program to the letter and has seen tremendous success in doing so. Despite only taking up running in 2019, Victor has a 10k PB of 29:30, and he attributes his rapid progression entirely to the double threshold system. So if double threshold is something you're interested in trying, or are just keen to hear how it works on a practical level, then you'll hopefully enjoy today's chat with Victor Schmangs. Victor, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys. Really, really nice that you invited me.
Yeah, Callum made the introduction. You and Callum have met a few times before. Is that right?
That's correct. I was staying in Bristol for a month, like 6 months ago. But I didn't meet Callum there. But we had a good chat before the Telford 10K now a couple of months ago.
So, yeah. What brought you to Bristol?
That was more or less my wife is Aussie, and she has she had a visa problem in Sweden, so we had to be outside the Schengen area for 3 months.
There you go. So, you know, Brexit does have its advantages.
for sure. That's like the only good thing so far I could come up with that Brexit.
that'll be that next time one of the politicians wants to make a statement though. That they'll pick up on this, I'd have thought.
Yeah.
And this will be listed as one of them.
Yeah, you ran quite well at Telford when I saw you there, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a good race. I was in pretty good shape. I think I toasted myself a little bit. I had a friend that I was running with, Archie, who was gonna go. He went for like sub 29. So I was just. I kind of just tried to stick behind him for as long as possible, but lasted for the famous like 6 kilometers or so.
What did he finish in?
I think it was like 29:15 or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I remember he did quite well.
That's a tough course as well. If you're struggling the last sort of mile and a bit, just that straight line just goes on forever, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't think that was going to be that like tight in the start. We always like normally in these like races with like a lot of good runners, it's not as crowded in the beginning. So it's really hard to pass people in the start.
Yeah,
during the,
sure.
Very narrow. That last straight worked in my favor, though. Not when me and Victor did it, I had a terrible race. But the year before I ran, that's still my personal best from there. And that last straight that's, what is it, probably about 2 miles of just straight in a line for the last bit.
Well,
probably worked in my favor because when
it's that far, if you include the out, it's I think it's about 5 mile at the turn point, I think. So you got like a mile and a quarter back. I think it's about 2k.
Okay, 2k is probably what I'm thinking of, because when I turned round at the cone, I can't remember exactly what it was that went on in my brain, but I thought there was 1k to go. I saw a sign that said, I don't know, but I thought there was a K to go. So I started really pushing. I was like, oh, this is the longest K of my life. But then I was like, I must be nearly finished. And so I kept pushing. And before I knew it, I'd been pushing for 2K, not 1K. And then suddenly I'd had a really good last couple of K to the race. So it actually worked out quite well. But last year it was a bit frosty on the ground. And yeah, I had a bad one, but Victor and Archie ran very well.
It's an amazing course. It was the first time for me, so probably feels like a race that I'm probably going to race for every year from now on.
Yeah, nice. Have you ever done any other UK races?
I did. I think the first one I ever did was like last year, the Salford 10K in April. That was like the first time I did a sub 30 run, so it was more or less I just tried to find a race in Europe with a pretty flat course, because I was in good shape, so I just wanted to get it done, kind of.
You just found Salford just online and just picked it at random? There's no sort of particular reason for you to be in Manchester or anything?
No, exactly. I was just googling around for like fast races around that weekend, and I think it was like Runners World UK or something that listed like 10K races.
So yeah. Where are you based, Victor?
I'm based in Stockholm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so my half marathon PB is from Stockholm.
Cool, cool. Then you
Yeah.
can probably run a lot faster somewhere
Well,
else because
yeah,
that's a pretty
it's yeah.
tough course.
Well, let's put it this way. When I ran that 13 years ago, I had no intention of it still being my PB.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah.
So what happened since then?
Oh, blimey. That would be a series of podcasts in itself. I mean, in a nutshell, I've had a career of injury problems, unfortunately, which, yeah, I've kind of curtailed any building any long-term momentum. Yeah, so I haven't given up on it yet, but yeah, it's been a lot of years of just no running at all.
All right. I mean,
Yeah.
it just shows that we're like, it's a good carrot to think about that this could be every time you're on a starting line, it's like this could be the last time I'm in really good shape. So just,
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. So you got to give it everything.
yeah,
Yeah.
definitely. Great.
So Callum mentioned just before we came on that you know Ben Felton. Is that via the Stockholm connection?
Absolutely, absolutely. I started to run in 2019, my last year at like uni, kind of. And I think Ben and I ran like the same. I think that was his first race as well, like 2019. So we started in the same club here in Stockholm before he had to go back to the UK again.
Yeah, because we when Victor came over to Bristol, all the guys we had just done a thing with Ben Felton as well, with one of our Bristol Track Club races, and yeah, we were just chatting about him randomly, or Kurt was chatting about him, and then Victor was like, "Yeah, I know Ben. I was one of the guys who convinced him to start his YouTube channel or something like that."
Oh yeah, that was really cool when he moved back to UK and he talked to him. I think it was on like Instagram, the chat, and he was just like, "Oh, I'm just gonna go for it," like, trying to just work with the running and stuff. And that was super super
Yeah.
cool that he made it so well. Like, it's really really inspiring.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
that's
mean
great.
you've done quite well on that front yourself, to be fair, haven't you, on socials?
Yeah, well, I'm not as good with the content, I guess. So that's Ben, but I've just been trying to put on all of my training and kind of like that, like both on Strava and Instagram. So it's just kind of think it's fun. I'm doing like the classic like Norwegian lactate like method
Yeah.
kind of strategy, as the same thing as you had Simen highlighted a couple of months ago where you talked about. But so I think it's just fun to, for me it's just like getting better is easier if you share it a lot than like you get a lot of people's inputs and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll definitely get into that training a little bit more in the next couple of minutes. But not to keep going on about Ben, we've just had a podcast with him, so this one's about you. But I think one of the similarities that you two have got is you both, like you said, you both kind of started training and running seriously around the same time, and I think you've both seen kind of similar levels of success in a very short period of time. And for me, that's one of the reasons why your training and your results have caught the attention of a lot of people out there on Instagram and runners in general. When you say you only started running in 2019, did you literally, first buy a pair of running shoes in 2019? Had you done any training before that? What was, talk us through the start for you in terms of running. When did you start training, really?
Yeah, it was actually more or less like I'm an ex like ice hockey player. I played like at a kind of elite level when I was a junior to like maybe 1 year senior year between like when I was maybe like yeah from I was born more or less from like 5 6 years old till maybe like 21, and then I had like a pretty long break from like doing nothing more than just going to the gym and maybe warm up on the treadmill a couple of like maybe 10 minutes warm up, stuff like that, just to look aesthetically good, you could say, like for 12 years till I was 33, 2019. So that's when I was kind of started because I always knew that I had a good, like I have people in my family that's been really good runners, so I knew that I had some kind of capacity. So that New Year's between 2018 and 2019 was like I just kind of made a New Year's resolution to see how fast I could do a 10K run, more or less like that.
So that was at the beginning of 2018 or beginning of 2019, sorry.
Beginning of 2019.
Okay. So
So
that year, what was your 10K that year then?
So I started to just read like runners where I listened to podcasts and stuff during the during spring, and that was like really, my training was really, really bad. I had this like loop outside or like more like gravel loop of 12K. So I tried to just run 4:00 pace per kilometer. I not really know what that is in miles.
Yeah,
It's like that's
six
like
20-ish.
six,
Yeah.
yeah, six, six and a half inish, six and a half ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did this like the loop like a couple of times a week, like maybe 3 times a week, till I found out that that's pretty bad training. So then I started to do more like interval stuff, and had my first 10K race, and I think it was like June, and I ran in like 34 something, 34, 30-ish.
Yeah. Nice. So that so when you ran
It's
that
good stuff, wouldn't it?
that was basically off the back of a few 12K runs per week, and then and you had just started doing some interval training at that point as well,
Yeah,
to run
maybe I've
34.
maybe done like 2 or 3 sessions on the track. And then like it was like a really, really bad race as well, because the guy who won, like maybe like he was maybe running like 31 something. I tried to just be on his back for the first K. So the first K was like 3:06, which is like fast. So I was lactic for the whole race, more or less. So that was like
But did you even at that point though, did you get the impression you're like, oh, hang on, I could actually be quite a decent runner here? Like even just run 34 off of limited training and hanging with the leader, even though only for a K. Did you already get the idea that, oh, okay, I could be good at this, or did that come later?
Yeah, but absolutely, because like that, the first K didn't feel like hard as in, oh, this pace is hard. It was just more like, I'm not an economic runner. I like you waste too much oxygen in this pace, more or less. So I was like, the pace didn't feel tough, but it was just that I was a pretty bad runner. But then I started in a club, that club that Ben also started in. I was convinced for people that said like, if you run that fast, you really should try to see how good you can become. And also this race was not in any like carbon shoes. It was just like race flats. So then I bought a pair of like first Vaporflies, and started to run in this club. And then in October, I ran like 32:09, I think.
Nice.
And then I was pretty irritated that I didn't run under 32. So then I squeezed in a race maybe like a couple of weeks afterwards in 31, 37. So that was the first year.
So what you're saying is you haven't really improved at all. You just bought a pair of decent shoes.
I think that was at least 1 minute with the Vaporflies from 32, definitely.
Nice.
Okay, so yeah, so basically 1 year into running, you're running 31 and a half.
Yeah.
And then presumably at this point, on like a local level, coaches and other athletes of that are starting to notice, and yeah, what's you're already in a club, and is that the club that you stayed with, or have you moved on to different groups, or?
Yeah, I moved on. Like, I moved twice since then. That was like, this group is really good. I have a really good like community, more or less. But so that's really nice, and they have like a really, really like good group of runners between maybe 38 to 32 for the 10K. So that's like, if you have that capacity, that is like awesome group. But then the year after, like 2000, and I ran for another year in that club. But then Adidas started like a elite running like group in Stockholm that I joined. That was the time when they got there like the first super shoe. So I ran with, and then that was the time also when I started myself with the Norwegian kind of more method of training.
So how did that come about?
I ran I pushed down the time to like 30:29 within that July 2020. So that was like more or less exactly 1 year after I started. But then I had a little bit of a plateau. I was doing more like before I started with the Norwegian system. I had a little bit of a plateau where I didn't get better. I think I was running a lot more like anaerobic stuff. So I didn't run enough, I think. So that was like how far I could get with like talent, I think. And then I'll just started with this. I just went to this lab, and he said that the test leader, he just said it. Your running economy is pretty, pretty bad. So like you have a really high VO2 max, but like if you want to be better now, you really have to start to run more. So then what was when I was like, watching the Ingebrigts and the series and all that, so I just thought that that could be a good system for me to start doing.
So is that the done thing in Sweden? Is that a normal way to train, or are you an anomaly?
Yeah, I think like for elite runners, I there's not a lot of elite runners who doesn't do this system, but I think I'm maybe the one in the country right now that runs like most miles within this system.
So tell me what you think about this, Victor. So I was chatting with Henrik Ingebrigtsen over dinner in a training camp, and he said, so what's the difference between the Swedish word for threshold and Norwegian word for threshold? They're both like terskel, is that right?
Terskel, yeah.
In Norwegian, is it terskel, and in Swedish, it's terskel?
Yeah, I think there's a different. We have like the O with two dots over it, and they have this O with
Right. So it's pronounced very slightly differently. But anyway, he was basically saying that in Norwegian terskel means to bring the lactate monitor to training and actually use it. But Swedish terskel is to bring the lactate monitor to training and then train as hard as you want. So
I think I totally understand what he means. Like we like, for example, the elite group that I'm training with, we have these guys who still wants to be like in the top group and just see. So I totally understand what he means.
I mean that's exactly what he was getting at. I think he was basically saying that this method, you know, the Norwegian training, Norwegian threshold method kind of exists, and a lot of people know, you know, roughly what it is, but there's still like quite a big lack of understanding about exactly how to execute it. But for me, like having looked at, you know, what the stuff that you've put out there on Instagram with the lactate measurements and what you're putting up on videos and stuff, I mean, it looks like you're doing, yeah, exactly what the Ingebrigtsens and the Norwegians are doing, basically, to be honest, you know, keeping the lactate at the right levels and stuff like that. So how did you learn that, basically?
Oh, it's been like I'm a guy who I'm really, but for my whole life I've been a guy who's really getting caught in these like rabbit holes. So now it's just the Norwegian lactate method rabbit hole. So I've been like Marius Bakken, who made it famous. Like I think I've been reading all of his like reports and like podcasts. He's been in like for the latest year. Like it's so important to be on the right side, because like we have a guy in our group, for example, that's notoriously over like they're like pushing it a little bit, and it's just very clear to see the results if you're not pushing it compared to like if you're on the right side. And it's I haven't listened to a lot of podcasts, to be honest, to say that has got it like 100% right. So it was very interesting that you guys had Simon Halle here a couple of months ago to explain.
Yeah, so Simon Simon's coached by, and actually, so he knows it very well. So
yeah, then I guess that he's doing it 100% right. That would be a dream to be coached by Maurice Buckingham.
Yeah, exactly.
Not coached by his granddad anymore.
I think kind of it's more like his grandfather's the coach on the ground kind of thing. Right. You know, he will like
he's while he's actually there on a Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of like cycling the bike with him and pacing him and helping him. And his grandfather's still super knowledgeable. He worked a lot with Marius Bakken back in the day. But I think Marius is the one who's kind of like, you know, guiding the training. Mm.
Sorry, kind of thought you finished.
Well, I was going to say, you know, okay, yes, we've had Simon Hallerhagen on the podcast already, and we've spoken a little bit about, well, not a little bit, we've gone into quite some depth about this kind of training method. But for anyone who hasn't listened to that podcast, could you maybe just give us a quick rundown of the training you are doing, Victor, and you know, just maybe explain kind of your view on the reason you're taking lactate measurements and things like that. Again, I know we've already done it, but
yeah, no, Cal, that's exactly what I was going to ask Victor to do. But I think before we do that, can you just quickly, Victor, give the listeners, before we talk about your training, just a snapshot of where you are now? So we've got up to running sort of 31. Where did we get to? I can't remember where in the story we got, but so like what times are you running now after like 4 years as a runner?
I run the latest, like the latest PB was now in Valencia 10K in January. I ran a 29:30, which I think was not so good with compared to the work as I've done. So hopefully I think I could squeeze that down, but you know, you never know, you know, she knows.
Yeah, sure.
You can before you have done it. But yeah, okay. Close to 29 is the aim for before the summer.
Cool. Brilliant. Yep. So yeah, then as Cal said, just give us a snapshot of what is training for you.
Yeah, more or less, my training is extremely boring. I do the same thing every week, more or less. So can go through very fast. I know you did like a really
there'll be people listening who haven't heard that.
You can do it very fast. Monday is like I do exactly the same route, 2 times 12 kilometers. I found like a really flat asphalt route that I'm doing, so like that's the only kind of more or less easier route I do. So 2 times that route is 12 kilometers with some sprints baked into the second session during the afternoon, and then Tuesday is the double threshold, and I've done 5 times 6 minutes on the same threshold in our club hall long time now to get a lot of data to see where I'm at with the lactate, and then I'll normally do 25 times 400 in the afternoon, and then Wednesday is exactly the same thing as Monday, that your asphalt 12k times 2, and also doing a little bit of sprints baked into the second session. Thursday is double threshold again, 5 times 6 minutes on that treadmill in the morning, and there may be like a little longer sessions there with like 1,000 meter intervals or 4 minute intervals in the afternoon. Friday, same thing, 2 times that 12K. I'm trying to do, I have a hill right outside my door. So I do, instead of the strides there, I do a couple of hill sprints that are shorter, so maybe like 15 second ones, or a little bit steeper than the hill sprints that we do on Saturday, the classic 20 times 200 meters. And then I also done on the Saturday after the hill sprints, I do a shorter easy session of maybe 8 to 10K where I finish with 4 times 200 meters now, maybe in very much over speed. And then I do a long run of around 30 kilometers now. That's more or less the week.
And what does that work out as in total volume?
That is around 185 kilometers. So what is it, like 118 miles, maybe, stuff like that.
Yeah, and you're doing that like pretty much week in, week out, right? Not many changes.
No, exactly. I really much believe in like the system as like you have a guy called Christian Ulriksen that has a podcast in Norway. He said it in a really good way when he said like I really believe that most intensive miles per week over a long period is like that's where the battle is, and if you can manage to do that, that's when you win.
So what is it you're looking for, sort of as you say, if you're looking for progression week to week to week, is it to run a little bit faster at the same lactate?
Yeah, exactly. I really used it that the Tuesday and the Thursday morning there where I do the 5 times 6 minutes on the same treadmill. I really use that lactate as a very good indicator to see where the fitness is. For example, now I had a period after the Valencia race with a lot of like stress and stuff, so I was kind of off for a month. So I can really see what I did before Valencia. I did that session in 306 with under 2.0 millimoles, 306 per kilometer, and now I do it maybe in 312. So I'm 6 seconds seconds off compared to the fitness I was in before Valencia.
But then you can see this is the correct intensity because the lactate meter is telling me so. So there's no temptation to go, well, hang on, I want to run 306 again and just force it to be back where you.
Oh no, definitely not. Then I fry myself and the whole system is ruined.
Do you think that's somewhere where people who maybe aren't doing this system at all maybe fall down, that they don't have that objective measure, and yeah, maybe you're out for a few weeks and then you're like, oh, I can't have lost that much fitness. I need to just, you know, I need to do these Ks in 310, not 315.
Absolutely. And the whole system is, you know, to make your aerobic capacity or like build your aerobic health. So like if you do these sessions and it becomes a little bit more anaerobic, like if you try to push the same pace as you did like when you were really fit, then you, then the whole purpose of the system is there, like gone.
And I think quite an interesting way of demonstrating that is, I don't know the exact time frame, probably a couple of months ago. I'm only quoting this basically from your own Instagram, so I hope you don't mind me bringing it up. But basically, you were a bit fried, right? You were doing some sessions much slower than you used to with higher lactate, and you know, you use that data to just bring the pace down, go back to basics, and you know, even though you were running almost 20 seconds per case slower than you know that you can when you're at your best, you were still just training at that level because that's what you knew you needed to do, right?
Absolutely. It's just definitely, and I think it's just that just absolutely. I just the lactate tell is just everything out.
So how? So two follow-up questions to that. One, how long did it then take to kind of get back to where you felt where you'd like to be, to get back to your inverted commas normal level, and how hard was that to have the discipline to just accept running much slower?
It's not as fun to go to this to the clubhouse and do the 5x6 minutes. And like when I started now after this stress symptoms, so like I started with maybe like 3:20 pace compared to 3:06 when I was really fit, and then I just had a little bit higher lactate, so maybe 2.2. And then I've just been working my way down to, today, for example, I had last week, because I didn't have any strips today, but last week I had the 3:12 pace at 2.0. So that's exactly where I want to be. So I just feel it's just their patience, more or less. Like the most important race for me this year is the Great Manchester Run in May. So like, I really hope that I have the 3:06 and hopefully better 3:04 pace in for those sessions then.
So just for the benefit of probably almost all of the listeners who probably haven't measured their lactate before, or who don't know about this other than maybe the fact that they've listened to it in other podcasts or something like that, when you're saying these numbers 2.0, 2.2, what exactly are you referring to?
Like when I'm referring to now, it's like what I think it's I think this is a little bit complicated as well, because I can hear these like numbers and you can see it on Instagram and like YouTube a lot, like that you have like 4.0 should be your anaerobic threshold, and like if you do the double thresholds you should have maybe 4.2.0 and then 2.0, but it's really like individual. I would say it's really interesting, but I think like to answer your question, 4.0 is where I think when a group level people would maybe be on there, where your anaerobic threshold is. And if you do these double sessions, you want to do like more of a sub threshold morning to more like maintain your fitness. And that is done in 2.0 millimoles.
So that's almost to say, like if you're around 2.0, let's say below 3 in the morning, you know, you're definitely working at sub threshold and therefore very much aerobically, right?
Exactly. And you have this, like, what you see in this, like, if you read a lot of like Marius Becken, the guy who like came up with this system, he's like, it's much better to be maybe 0.5 to 1.0 millimoles below your anaerobic threshold if you go to a lab and measure it. Because that is much more beneficial to be like week in and week out, like in that range, compared to like risking to fry it with if you want to be like, sure. I don't know, like 3.9, if you on a group level say that it's 4.0, that is the.
So sorry, I think I might have missed something. It's a suggestion. It's not the suggestion. Sorry, is your method then that the afternoon sessions are a bit higher up toward getting up towards 4, or is that aiming for 2 millimoles as well in the afternoon?
I'm aiming for like 3 millimoles for the afternoon, and I think like a common like what people say I heard online is 4, but for me it's like 3, and I think that is very individual as well, and that's like
so it's basically don't go above 4.
Yeah, exactly. But, sure. but it is a little bit more complicated than that, because like the fitter you get, the like the breaking point for your anaerobic threshold, if you look at the lactate, it's getting lower and lower. For example, when I was really, really bad there, the first lab test I did when I hadn't run a lot, I had 4.6 or something as like the breaking point for my anaerobic threshold. And the latest one when I was really fit around the Valencia 10K around in 2.9. So
right. So I mean, I think this is one of the reasons why it gets a bit complicated for people trying to use this system, particularly if you're doing it individually without any sort of serious sports science support.
Absolutely. Because if I did it like lab test and had a 4.6 and I thought that was my anaerobic threshold, and I was just doing it, tried to hit as close to that I think a lot of people do with this system, then I would fry my system pretty badly, I would say, with my aerobic threshold.
So if you hadn't have done regular retests, you'd now be doing all those afternoon sessions way above your threshold, not realizing that you were above it.
Definitely.
So how often are you retesting?
I retest every 6 months.
Okay. Yeah. Is that about standard? Is that sort of the norm?
I think I do it pretty often, because like I just see this system as like a little bit like Lego. I just add things to the system. So like, for example, now I'm adding more miles. So I did 165 kilometers last period, and now I'm up to like 180, 182. So what I'm going to do now is just maybe around in May or June, I'm just going to do another test and see if I've been benefiting anything from adding more miles.
Yeah.
Alan, do you know anyone who's doing this really seriously in the UK? Really seriously?
No, definitely not. Like I've been training a lot and I was staying in Manchester before I went down to Bristol. So like I was training with the guys from Salford a couple of times. And no, I haven't really heard any British athletes doing it.
I think more and more people are starting to use lactate as an indicator in everyday sessions. Like if you go back, let's say, I don't know, 5-10 years, definitely people were like occasionally having a lactate test in a lab and then almost doing nothing with that data, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Like you'd go and see, oh, okay, my lactate threshold is this, and then not retest for another 2 years or something. But now I'm seeing more and more people who are like taking lactate monitors to workouts and using them. But I still think there's quite a lack of understanding around what that, like you said, Victor, around what that lactate threshold actually is and what it means and how to use it in to guide your training. Having said that though, I do still think that this method is only really beneficial if you're like really stretching the upper limits of how much volume you can handle. Because if you're not doing, let's say if you're doing, I don't know, 70, 80 miles a week instead of 100, 110 miles a week, then there's enough opportunity for recovery within the program to allow yourself to push harder in the workouts. And I'm still not convinced one method is correct over another, if you know what I mean. Like a lot of the American, collegiate runners and a lot of the American track clubs and stuff have been doing sessions or training programs for years and years, where they do still do the two very hard sessions per week with easy running in between and a harder long run or something like that. And that seems to work for a lot of those guys, you know, there's still
how do you reckon, Cal, it would work? Something that has sort of been discussed amongst the people I run with is potentially just looking at swapping out our standard Tuesdays. So say if we're just a pretty standard British system, Tuesdays is interval day.
Yeah.
And we tend to be reasonably high volume and reasonably controlled, compared, like it's not really high intensity.
Yeah.
But yeah, one thing that's been bandied about a little bit as a consideration is just to swap out a Tuesday for a double threshold. Not to try and do an entire week, but just say, right, okay, instead of our usual Tuesday night intervals, let's try double threshold on a Tuesday.
Yeah. That's basically what I did for a full year. So I did Tuesday double threshold, then Thursday one session and Saturday one session, but still then you're kind of leaning into the territory where you've got probably four sessions per week plus a long run, so then you are stretching the volume and stretching the amount of quality in the week. So even though you're only doing one double threshold day on Tuesday, I would still then say, well, your Thursday and Saturday needs to still also be very controlled, because just purely because of the amount of quality volume in the program.
So this is the reason why I think it would potentially work for me. This is assuming I can handle my own normal training before I try and add something else. We're a Tuesday, Friday, Sunday system, which is pure American collegiate, really. And Friday is more often than not a long controlled tempo. And then Sunday is a long controlled run, which only gets fast once you're already very fit.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe we can let's send this back to Victor quickly then. So Victor, my question for you is almost, why are you never doing like long tempo stuff? Why is everything intervals?
I just think you want to have like, it's just like most bang for the buck. For example, if I would do like, say, it was very common before I started with this system, I just really looked into like the Tom Schwartz 10-minute lead, kind of what he was doing with his runners. And they all often had this like tempo runs on 40-minute tempo on a Thursday compared to a double threshold. Like if I do the 5 times 6 minutes in the morning, and then I could probably squeeze in here like maybe 12 times 1,000 meter in the afternoon. So that is just like a lot more training within higher intensity, but not the lower lactate, I would say, than to do a 40-minute tempo run. So that's what I think. It's just that it's more beneficial to higher speed, split up in two, and they're more volume. So I think that's more bang for the buck.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, the way I've heard it explained is similar, but it's almost like when we talk about threshold and all these measurements you're taking, threshold pace is different to threshold effort, really. So
absolutely.
When, for example, when you do, I don't know, 20 times 400 meters, let's say you're doing them in, I don't know, 69, 70 seconds, for example, that's what, 250, 255 per K. 255 per K is not the threshold pace you would discover if you were doing a tempo run, right? Because there's no way you can.
Yeah, so I think this is where in the UK, how it's traditionally interpreted and used is that you go to a lab and you don't, and you get told your threshold corresponds to X minutes, X seconds per kilometer. And people then go, oh, right, okay, my threshold's 312 per K. I go and do tempo runs at 312. Like, I don't think there's any, the idea that your threshold pace changes dependent on what training you're doing. That's something that's, I think, quite a new idea.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like it's kind of easy to understand if you let's think about the 400 session again.
Oh yeah. I think it's very easy to understand once you've been introduced to it, but I just don't think that's how it's, I don't think that's how it's used more often than not around here.
Say if you get like, I don't know, say if you get like 310 as in the lab as your like anaerobic threshold capacity. So if you go out like, and do, I don't know, like 315 for a tempo run, 40 minutes. And then you measure the lactate after that session for 40 minutes in like 5 to 10 seconds slower than your anaerobic threshold, like measured in the lab. I would say that lactate will be a lot higher than if you do 25 times 400 in 305. So that is like lower than the threshold that you measured in the lab. So like, and then you also get these benefits of like you're mechanically running in faster speeds, I would say as well.
Yeah. And I think that is one of the biggest benefits for specifically for, let's say, middle to long distance runners. I think as soon as you're training for maybe up to 10K to half marathon, then I do think it's beneficial to do a longer tempo run in the program somewhere, just because it's more specific to the thing that you're training for. But certainly for 1500, 5K, 10K, again, let's take that 20 times 400 meter session. You can do, you're saying 25 times 400, sorry. So you're doing 10K worth of volume at probably around 10K pace, right? Whereas obviously you can't do a 10K tempo run at 10K pace, because then you've gone all out and you need a week and a half of recovery. Exactly. Whereas if you do 25 times 400, you can stay well below lactate threshold. You can recover in just a couple of days, ready to do another workout, and you ran 10K at 10K pace. So suddenly it's a very almost quite specific session in terms of the pace that you're running at. So I think that's one of the biggest benefits, really.
Absolutely. And I think that is just like, I really like that podcast with, you know, Magnus and Marcus, that's Steve Magnus and John Marcus. And I think they described the system really good. It had like a podcast when they were into describing it as well. And they were just like, it's like drinking beer, you know, if you're like drinking 3 beers every night, you're going to be pretty resistant compared to if you drink like 8 beers 2 times a week. Yeah. You're going
right.
to be like better, much better drink 3 beers every day for it. Then you're probably not going to be even drunk for like a couple of weeks. So that's finding that homeostasis when you can just put in the the miles, like these sub threshold and threshold miles, compared to frying yourself with really hard sessions two times a week. I think that was a really good comparison.
So how does it then correspond? Not correspond, that's not the right word for it, but how does it then translate into a race situation where you're now trying to race at a lactate level that you haven't practiced in training? Like, I'm presuming there's no negative effects, because otherwise people wouldn't be running fast, but I'm just wondering how does the body then handle racing at, you know, whatever lactates are in a race, which are going to be way higher than what you've been doing in training?
Yeah, the crazy thing is, like, for me, it's just like when you see that you have a better, like, anaerobic threshold capacity, like you're in the lab, it doesn't really matter if you just done intervals for a whole year, you would have a much easier time to squeeze out a good time on the 10K. And I think, like, for this longer session, I think it's a little bit like psychology as well. Like for myself, I would probably want to have something, a longer thing, to just like convince myself that I could do a good, like, longer run, like a 10K or a half marathon. But then you have this my friend who I ran with in Telford, Archie Castile. He just ran like a 2:10:49 marathon in Seville in February, and he just been doing this training and two not even good, like, marathon sessions before that race. So for him, it's just, he doesn't care so much. He's like, I think a lot more, like, I'm much more psyching myself out. But he's like, his best ability is that he doesn't psych himself out. He's just like, yeah, but it feels good. And then he just, yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. I think it's a lot of his mental part of it to have longer sessions. Yeah.
I have to say, I've also experienced that with this. So when you were describing your training earlier, Victor, mine's almost identical. So, you know, we've been doing basically the same thing for the last several months, and leading up to RMR 5K and, when was that, early February, I had basically only done around 6 to 8 weeks of this training. I'd basically never gone higher than 4 millimoles in lactate, aside from actually the Saturday hill sprint sessions, which where we go a little bit higher. But that's still nowhere near as specific as a hard 5K workout. So I was really had no idea what to expect going into the RMR 5K, considering I had only been working on my basically aerobic capacity. And I ran 14:07, which was only 2 seconds off my best, and I felt amazing in the race. I felt like I just never really got to that point where I was truly hurting, to be honest. So that for me was one of the first experiences of exactly what you just described, where I could just do aerobic based training and then go into a race and actually perform pretty well.
I suppose you've got absolutely no idea what your lactate actually was at the finish line there.
No, I'm tempted to test it after a race sometime. Yeah,
I just think it'd be really interesting just to know.
Yeah, I'll be like throwing up all over my lactate monitor.
I think that is really interesting. I said that to a marathon coach here in Sweden, he's coaching the best female marathon runner in Sweden. I said, like, can't you just take a lactate, like, do a sample directly after the race to see how high it is?
Yeah.
I think you'd have a hard time getting someone just crossing a marathon finish line to agree to that.
But have you ever done a lactate test, Victor, in like a really hard training session? Like, you know, done like something 5K specific workout where you've gone all out or something and tested then?
I really haven't. Like we do, you know, the Saturdays, like this X Factor
Yeah.
workout that you have on like Saturdays. Like last week I had 9.7 millimoles for the hill sprint. So I think that's the highest I've ever had. Like I'm really like a long distance guy. So I have a really hard time too. You have another guy that it like had 13 would you say at the same
Yeah, because I can easily get mine to, well, not easily, it'd be a very hard session, but I can get mine to like 19, 20 even.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you're more, I guess you have much more like fast muscle.
Yeah, exactly. More of a 1500 background, which I think is, yeah, why it's a bit easier to do that. But yeah, no, it's all very interesting. I wanted to bring it back very slightly away from, you know, the specifics of the training to when you started this training method. How long did you see, or how long did it take you to then improve to where you're at now? So 29:30. Did you see immediate improvements, or was it more of like a long-term gradual thing? when I say long term, I guess you've only been running for 3 years, so can't have been that long.
Yeah, but that was actually pretty crazy because I did these like because I started to go to this lab every 6 months, and then like when I did 30:29 on track 10,000 meters in 2020, and then I did that was like in June, so and then I did another test in November, and I was kind of my fitness was like less good, so like then I started, you know, with the system, and then the 6 months I had, I think it was 320 anaerobic capacity then, mm-hmm. like the pace. And then after like 5 months of this training, I was down to 305, 15 seconds faster. For
wow. Okay.
So for me, I was convinced with this system for me.
So when you said, when I started with the system, did you just jump straight into 185K per week, two double threshold sessions? Or was there a way that you kind of like built into it more gradually?
Yeah, I built into it. I was maybe at that time when I started, I maybe run 80 to 90 kilometers a week. So I started. Oh, wow. So I started to just, I knew that I wanted to go up to around where I am right now. But I started just like maybe now I do 5x6 minutes. I think I started with maybe 2 or 3x6 minutes. And instead of 25 times 400, I maybe started with like 10 or 12. So I've been working my way gradually up to.
Okay, so that's interesting, because before we came on the podcast, I was thinking about exactly this subject. So at that moment, you were doing, yeah, okay, so you mentioned 3x6 minutes in the morning, and what did you say, 12 times 400 in the evening, for example?
Yeah.
So why at that point, what's the point in splitting that session when the body could pretty easily handle that in one session? So you could easily do one session, which is 2x6 minutes followed by 12x400. That would be a pretty good workout. What's the benefit of splitting that into two?
Absolutely. For me, like if I coach people now as well, so I wouldn't like do it to some. I think I was just very committed to that. I wanted to do this system fully. So I was just trying to get my body to this homeostasis stasis.
Okay.
Like,
so that was more of like a pathway to where you're at now, rather than thinking, okay, it's actually beneficial to do two threshold workouts in one day. It was more, I know where I want to be next year, and this is the way to get there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like it's if you don't run more than like, if you run less than 120 kilometers maybe a week, I think it's, I don't see the reason to split it up, because then you can just within like, if you want to do 80, 20 or 30, 70, like how much, like sure. threshold you want to have, you can easily squeeze that in two sessions.
So Victor, what would you suggest then? I'll use myself just as a hypothetical example. Just say I'm a typical runner who's doing a full volume session on a Tuesday. Let's say roughly 10Ks worth of intervals on a Tuesday would be pretty normal, who then wanted to try double threshold. How would you transfer from one session of 10K volume into two sessions? Like how would you kind of break it down? Would we do less and then the same again in the evening, or would you do the full session and then add a really small session in the evening? How would you go about
kind of I haven't had a runner that really, really wanted to do like double thresholds just to do it. Like, so I tried to, the ones I'm coaching that kind of want to do the same, like, the same method as I'm doing, like I try to get them up to like if I feel like they're both their like life situation or that they can handle the mileage, I think I go up to maybe around 120 with just doing the maybe the 400 meters, kind of that shorter stuff on Tuesdays and then longer stuff on maybe Thursdays, you know, and then I just start with having one day, like maybe the Tuesday when they come up to a mileage where you start to have to increase like the quality workouts and they start to get too long, you know, to just have single ones. That's when I just split it up. And I think that's around maybe 120 kilometers, maybe if you think that you should do 30% of the sessions, it should be threshold sessions.
So I'm just trying to think how I can slightly reword my question, because
that point you said on the Tuesday you would then split it up. How would you split it and at what point?
For someone who's already used to doing approximately 10K worth of volume in one session.
Yeah. I would probably do try to do as I did. Like maybe like if you already more mileage than I did when I started, I think I would do like maybe 3 or 4 times 6 minutes in the morning, and then do maybe 20 times 400, something like that. Yeah. As a start.
Okay, yeah. So the total volume would be higher, but not double.
Exactly. So a little bit higher, and then you would if you would have done a single.
Yeah. But I think from my experience, the most important thing is never getting carried away at all. Like you have to be really confident that running and feeling a bit easy is a good thing, because I think it's so tempting to be like, oh, I feel really easy, I'm going to push it just a little bit, and you can still finish a workout feeling really good, feeling really controlled. And I've spoken about this in probably several other podcasts, but for me, it took me quite a while to learn the difference between feeling controlled, like mentally, and actually physically being controlled. And that was the only way I managed to do that was by measuring my lactate. And now I feel that because I've measured my lactate so often, I now actually know.
Yeah, that corresponds to.
Yeah, I know the corresponding values. So I know that when I get a certain feeling in my body and in my legs, I know I've gone, and I could probably tell you now, and so could Victor, I think, because he's obviously measured his lactate a lot. I could do a session, and before I've taken the measurement, I could tell you within 0.2, 0.3, what the lactate's going to be. Whereas before I had measured, I could finish a workout and think, oh, that felt really controlled. But if you took a measurement there and then, it could have been 5, it could have been 6, it could have been, you know.
So you almost just answered my follow-up question in that last sentence there. But do you think a lot of runners would be surprised at how high their lactate is when they think they're doing a fairly controlled session?
Yeah,
I have a calculator, 100% right. I definitely like, I had so many people that I'm coaching now, they're really into, I think they started to have me as a coach because they really think it's fun with you, the lactate measurement and all that. And I was just like, before they got their lactic meter, I just tried to slow them down because I've seen what they've done on the 10K, for example, and I know that they're running too fast. But that is the best thing to when they actually buy a lactate meter and they get it, it's black and white. They're like,
yeah,
they're,
sure.
Yeah.
So Victor, so are you measuring after every session or after every rep of a session?
I kind of like, these strips starting to be pretty expensive. So what I've heard from the Norwegians is like, if you have the same pace, like say if you decided to have 3:12 for the 5 times 6 minutes, for example, like 10 minutes into the session, you should more or less have the same lactate as. So like I measure after the second one. So that should be correlating with the lactate over the whole session. Same with the 400s, I do it after maybe 7 or 8, so like here to see if, so after that I just decide if I'll like go faster or if I just stick to
okay
it.
So you take one a third of the way through the session, for example, and then kind of trust that you're gonna have the discipline to stay at that level.
Yeah exactly.
Yeah. But and just because those strips are what, £2 a go or something?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, of course, it would be better to the best thing would probably to measure every like interval, but that would be really expensive.
Yes, and it does, I think, on 25 times 400.
Yeah, and I think also again, this came from chatting with Henrik Ingebrigts, and there is
beep 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 beep.
Yeah. There...
This conversation is specifically about Henrik.
I mean, Henrik is a really good source. I heard this is very good.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah, he knows his stuff. But partly when you measure, you are also taking something away from the workout, right? You know, whether it's a little bit of focus or just a little bit of extra recovery, especially in the 20 times 400 or 25 times 400, if you're only having 30 seconds recovery, let's say you measured 4 times during that workout, that's 4 points where you're having more than 30 seconds recovery, because it takes longer than 30 seconds to measure. Okay. And these are only like small differences, you know, maybe you have an extra 10, 15 seconds recovery, which in the grand scheme of things isn't much, but kind of adds up. And, you know, you still want the focus to be on the training. And when you're taking lactate measurements, you are just slightly removing that focus and away from the actual running. So that there is a balance there as well, I think.
Absolutely. And I think, yes, like Yeah, in my club in Stockholm is really good because the club has more or less committed to this system. So we're like, our coach is just standing there and just handing out, so we can have the 30 seconds break that we don't have to take longer. So he's just
Perfect. Yeah, nice. That's the dream.
So Victor, before we let you go, this has been a really fascinating chat. Like, so one of the things I think is, well, just worth bearing in mind is that if you're doing, during the Monday to Friday period, you're doing 4 interval sessions. That's quite time consuming. What's general life like for you? And how do you kind of balance doing 4, like on a Tuesday, doing, I mean, that takes hours, doesn't it? To do a warm up, a session, a cool down, then another warm up, another session, another cool down. Like, yeah, what's general life like, and how do you balance recovery?
Now it's really good, actually. That's another thing that is like, well, I hope I can do better times this year, because before I was working as like a real estate consultant, and now I'm just coaching and they're getting a little bit of like stuff from like my Instagram with brands and stuff. But so now it's very, very easy, because I start to do these like strength training after the second or threshold on Tuesdays as well. But like, I think it's just I can manage my own time, and I have a wife that is very, very good with her own things and doesn't complain too much about me being away a lot.
Yeah, okay, cool. So have you trained under this system whilst working full time?
Yes, I have. And that is like another, like, it's like so many things to say about this system. But like, for example, what the Marius Backen says is that you should just squeeze in these two sessions closer to maybe like 4 hours break between the first threshold session and the second, to have like as much recovery as possible when I was working. So I'm trying to do that more, to squeeze them closer to each other now when I can control my own time. But when I was working as a real estate consultant, I just did the first one at like 7 a.m. and the second one with the club at like 6. That was more or less almost 12 hours between.
Yeah, but not 12 hours of rest, 12 hours of working. So it's a little bit
yeah, different. Exactly. Plus working and the stress of
I have to say though, like I'm doing this now with full-time job, and like I actually think partly it's definitely mentally more easy, because you know exactly what you're doing and when you're doing it, and also because everything's so controlled, you don't feel drained the whole day, if you know what I mean. Like if you did a Tuesday session normally and, you know, you pushed it pretty hard or very hard, you do spend the rest of the day feeling quite drained. Mm. Whereas I can do 5x2K in the morning and feel, you know, totally fine for the rest of the day, ready for another session in the evening. Even with, okay, I know the ideal situation would be if you're a pro athlete, you're then just fully recovering for the rest of the day. But, you know, even with working in between sessions, I feel like it's definitely manageable mentally and physically, actually.
Absolutely. I think like this is a very good system, because you know what you do every week is actually the same thing, so you can plan around it. For me, that was perfect. It's like I have been able to do this kind of like a lot of like training as much if you had something like, I don't know, like a canola system or whatever. If you were a marathon runner, it would be harder. Exactly.
I say full-time job, but it's Tuesday afternoon at 1 o'clock and I'm sat in my bed recording a podcast with you guys. So.
Yeah, I mean, you work full-time hours, but kind of on your own time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, nice one. Victor, thank you very much. We won't keep you any longer, because appreciate you've got recovery to be cracking on with, ready for your evening session. But
what day is it? Hey, it's Tuesday, isn't it?
It's Tuesday, yeah. But yeah, what have you got this evening then?
Yeah, so now I'm going to the indoor track, because it's like 20 centimeters of snow in Stockholm right now. So 25x400 after speaking to you guys.
Nice. Perfect. With a group?
Yeah, with a group, yeah. And it's really, the group is amazing right now. We have this guy, Diego Estrada from America now. He ran the 10,000 meter race in the Olympics 2012 in London. He's doing a little bit of a comeback. So it's very inspiring group right now. So it's really fun.
Wow, nice. Yeah. Looking forward to
Victor, where can people follow along?
Yeah, on Instagram is probably where I'm at the most, like Victor Smang. So Victor with a C, Smang. Pretty strange name for a Brit, I guess. But
we'll put an at, so it's easy for people to find.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Awesome. Thank you, Victor. It's great to meet you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye. Speak again. Bye.
you've enjoyed this podcast, please consider leaving us a review on your preferred podcast platform. It's an easy way to support the show and help us spread the conversation to a wider audience. Thanks to Victor for joining us on today's show. I'm Gavin Smith, and along with my co-host Callum Jones, we run Running Trips, the company behind Kenya Experience and Training Focus Camps. For more information on our training camps for runners of all levels, you can head over to www.runningtrips.co.uk or follow us on Instagram at running_trips_official. Thanks again for listening to Conversations About Running.